This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yehiz Wuhib. Coming up this hour on Africa News Tonight,
the United Kingdom and Australia have joined the United States in warning of a possible terror attack in South Africa. The government is encouraging South Africans not to panic. And a top terrorism analyst agrees, but also says South Africa shouldn't get too relaxed.
That's VOA's Anita Powell reporting from Johannesburg. Details coming up.
Also, the UN Refugee Agency reports tens of thousands of people in southeast Niger have been forced to flee their homes in the wake of escalating attacks by Boko Haram militants. And UN humanitarian officials say since April of last year, more than 265,000 people have fled Burundi for neighboring countries.
We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on African News Tonight.
Our top story this hour, Britain and Australia have joined the United States in warning of a possible terror attack in South Africa. The government is telling South Africans not to panic, and a top terrorism analyst agrees. But he also says South Africa should not get complacent. VOA's Anita Powell reports from Johannesburg.
So far, the reported terror threat to South Africa has caused nothing but confusion. The U.S. Embassy sounded the alarm on Saturday by warning that Islamic State militants may target South African malls. Britain and Australia followed suit Monday. None of the foreign governments specified where the threat came from, though the U.S. Embassy described the threat as specific and credible. The U.S. also issued a similar warning last September. The country that doesn't seem particularly worried about this possible threat is South Africa. The nation's state security ministry waited 2 days after the American warning to issue a brief statement that said, basically, don't panic. State Security Minister David Mashlobo said, "We remain a strong and stable democratic country, and there is no immediate danger posed by the alert." Terrorism expert Jasmine Opperman agrees that South Africa is not a prime target.
There is no evidence that the Islamic State or any other extremist group in South Africa is planning any specific attack against public areas or tourist areas where people are congregating. Hence, risk rating remains low.
Al-Qaeda affiliates have targeted civilians in African nations that have opposed them, like Ivory Coast, Kenya, and Uganda. And Nigeria's Boko Haram, which claims links to the so-called Islamic State, has launched attacks in neighboring countries. But South Africa is far from those battlefields, says State Security Ministry spokesman Brian Dube, and is also not a power player in the international fight against Islamist militants.
We believe South Africa, in terms of our foreign policy, we've always advocated for peaceful negotiations and peaceful resolution to conflicts of the world. And we believe that in terms of this position we're taking, South Africa is not a target of some of the extremist organizations.
But, says Opperman, who is the director of Southern Africa Operations at Terrorism Research and Analysis Consortium, that doesn't mean South Africa is free and clear. She says her contacts have estimated that between 20 and 80 South Africans have joined the so-called Islamic State, most of them as educators and administrators, not as fighters. She said her contacts have no indication that cells are being formed or attacks have been planned in South Africa. However, that may change, she says, especially as the militant group finds itself boxed into a corner by the world's superpowers.
Ironically, this is going to be our next problem facing South Africa when it comes to terrorism. As pressure mounts on the caliphate, those people are more than likely want to return to a more safer place, and that will be South Africa. How we can deal with them is going to be a completely different new phase, and I hope that the South African government is preparing for that phase.
Dube said security officials are in constant communication with intelligence-sharing agencies and closely monitor for threats. At this time, neither the U.S., Britain, nor Australia is advising citizens to stop traveling to South Africa. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
The United Nations Refugee Agency reports tens of thousands of people in southeast Niger have been forced to flee their homes in the wake of escalating attacks by Boko Haram militants. Lisa Schlein reports from UNHCR headquarters in Geneva.
The UN Refugee Agency reports that attacks by Boko Haram on Friday, Sunday, and Monday on the town of Boso displaced an estimated 50,000 people in the troubled Difa region. UNHCR spokesman Adrian Edwards says those fleeing Boso are mainly walking westward to the town of Tumor, some 30 kilometers to the west.
Many people are reported to be traumatized, worried about their safety. People are sleeping in the open. People urgently need shelter, they need other help. The welfare of these people, others forced to flee in this region, is at present of great concern. Insecurity, lack of access, have long hampered humanitarian operations in parts of this region.
Last month, the UNHCR warned that security and the humanitarian situation in the Difa region were growing worse. The agency says the area is so dangerous, its staff has not been able to work in Boso since February 2015. That is when Boko Haram insurgents widened their area of conflict from Nigeria to Niger. Edwards says the UNHCR is working on a plan with authorities and aid partners to help the thousands of newly displaced people. He tells VOA that the UNHCR will be sending an emergency team to the Difa region this week.
We do have a camp not far away from there. It is at capacity with these new numbers that clearly couldn't be accommodated. They're part of the work of any team going in when you have displacement like this is to assess the situation, to try and look at and identify needs. And agree a plan of action with the authorities for that. So that's really what the team will be focused on.
Since the Boko Haram insurgency spread to Niger from Nigeria in February 2015, the UNHCR estimates at least 240,000 people have become displaced in the Difa region. Edwards says the displaced include 80,000 Nigerian refugees. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
The EU foreign policy chief wants to expand the role of vessels rescuing migrants and refugees on the Mediterranean. Federica Mogherini has the UN Security Council to give Operation Sophia ships the power to board vessels and seize illegal weapons being smuggled into Libya. UN envoy to Libya Martin Kobler says Libya is awash in more than 20 million weapons. The nation has a population of 6 million people. In Libya, at least two militias apparently in support of the new government of national accord are surrounding the eastern port of Sirte. They're trying to retake the city from more than 2,000 Islamic fighters.
The European Union is proposing to invest more in Africa as a way of slowing the flow of migrants and refugees to Europe. EU officials unveiled plans today at a meeting in Strasbourg, France. Most of the new arrivals have been brought to Italy. Many are rescued in flimsy boats or rubber dinghies on the Mediterranean near the Libyan coast. More than 2,000 have died this year trying to make the journey. Reporter Josephine McKenna is following EU proposals regarding the migrants and refugees. From Rome, she spoke to VOA's Jody Capua.
The European Parliament will be looking at a proposal which is really being pushed by the Italian government to strengthen this African Trust Fund, add around 500 million euros to this fund to really support projects and invest in Africa in a way that would slow the demand or the need for people to leave their home countries and cross the Mediterranean and come to Europe. We're looking at a total of around 2.3 billion euros overall, and the idea is to target countries including Nigeria, Senegal, Mali, Ethiopia, and Niger. This is also part of a plan. The EU is looking at strengthening the border between Niger and Libya to try and stop what they consider to be this constant flow of immigrants coming from that area.
Would you explain the approval process? These proposals would not go into effect right away, is that correct?
No, this proposal is being considered by the European Parliament. It's being presented and sponsored by Federica Mogherini, who is an Italian. She is essentially the Foreign Affairs Minister for the European Union. And she is speaking about this plan today, saying this is something that is needed to try and stop the flow of migrants. And there'll be more talk about this in the coming days.
Is there any late word on arrests being made regarding people smugglers?
Today we had news that 7 alleged people smugglers had been arrested by Italian police after a boat arrived on the coast of Sardinia late yesterday. That boat apparently had aboard 390 immigrants from Africa. Police have moved in and arrested 5 Egyptians, 1 Yemeni and 1 Somali citizen in association with that. We've seen earlier arrests in the last couple of weeks as the alleged people smugglers have arrived in Italy on the boats carrying the immigrants that have been rescued by international authorities in the Mediterranean. Police certainly are clamping down and trying to send a signal to people smugglers that this is really not going to work and that there are going to be consequences once they arrive in the country.
Josephine, we've been hearing a lot about tent camps springing up in France. Do you have any tent cities in Italy springing up?
We've had one informal tent camp cleaned out by authorities in the town of Ventimiglia on the French border in recent days. And we noticed that Catholic parishes in that area were taking in immigrants to try and keep them off the streets and give them some support. Today in Rome, authorities targeted a tent city on the outskirts of Rome where dozens of immigrants camped, waiting to find out what really is going to happen to them. And this is an indication that Italian authorities are taking this seriously, that they want to try and regulate it.
And I understand there's late word about the orphan migrant baby who's named Favor. Can you tell us about that?
Favor is a 9-month-old baby girl believed to be from Nigeria who was picked up in one of the disasters when the ship went down in the Mediterranean just over a week ago. Her mother, who was pregnant at the time, died in this tragedy. Favor was taken to the island of Lampedusa off the coast of Sicily. She's since been transferred to Palermo, and we just heard today she's staying with a couple in Palermo who are just thrilled to have her. It's not a permanent situation. She'll be a foster child with this couple. That couple was carefully selected by psychologists and judges, and she'll be staying with them until her future can be determined. It's quite a complex process here in Italy in terms of adoption. The authorities have to determine that she hasn't got any living relatives or whether her father is still alive, and that could take some time. Authorities here are still getting requests from all over the country to adopt this gorgeous little girl who's really stolen the heart of Italians.
That's reporter Josephine McKenna from Rome. She spoke to VOA's Jody Capua. It's estimated about 240,000 migrants and refugees have crossed the Mediterranean to Europe since January. More than 1 million arrived last year, mostly from Syria and the Middle East. This year, however, most are from sub-Saharan Africa because the refugee flow from Turkey to Greece has been restricted by a deal between the EU and Turkey.
Past the hour. This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America. UN humanitarian officials say since April of last year, more than 265,000 people have fled Burundi for neighboring countries. More than 100,000 are internally displaced. Also, more than 4.5 million people are reported to be food insecure. Violence began in Burundi over a year ago. That's when President Pierre Nkurunziza announced he would seek a third term, which political opponents called unconstitutional. Hundreds have died in the ensuing violence. This year, there has been a new wave of kidnappings and disappearances in Burundi. Reporter Moses Havayarimana has more from Bujumbura.
Targeted killings and arbitrary arrests have rocked Burundi since the crisis erupted last year. The National Human Rights Commission says at least 130 people have been killed since January. Janine is one of the many Burundians who are still searching for their family members. Her brother disappeared in April. She says a grey-coloured car came to her home at around 2:30 p.m. and found her brother in the house. They called him out and asked him if he lived there, and he said yes. Then they handcuffed him and drove off with him. Bosco is one of the residents in Chibitoki. He's still looking for his brother, who he says was taken from home by security forces. Bosco says that there are some people who lied to their family and took the money, promising to find his brother, but they didn't bring him back. He says that his family realized later that the officials just wanted to eat their money instead of bringing their brother back home. The police deny that people have disappeared, even though many families are looking for loved ones. In the meantime, cordon and search operations continue in an effort to stop terrorists. I asked the police spokesman about the situation.
But you have received some reports of people getting disappeared.
Police are receiving some plans about the people not disappeared. Maybe they kidnapped. Yeah, even some policemen have been kidnapped. You know, now we are on nine policemen have been kidnapped.
Some families hopes for finding those who were kidnapped or disappeared. In response, the National Human Rights Commission is calling for an investigation into the cases and for bringing the perpetrators to justice. Jean-Baptiste Baribonekeza is the chairman of the commission.
The commission condemns the other human rights violations that have been noticed, including at least 130 people were killed and a number of allegations of torture, abductions and arbitrary arrests as well. We are encouraging the security forces and the police and the judiciary to make sure that nobody can be arrested based on the fact that he participated in the demonstrations of last year.
The international community continues to call the Burundian government to put an end to the political crisis that has claimed more than 400 lives since last year. The violence arose after President Pierre Nkurunziza decided to run for a third term, a move that opponents said was unconstitutional. Observers say inclusive dialogue between the government and opposition is the only way to end the turmoil. For VOA Africa, I'm Moses Havyarimana in Bujumbura.
The wildlife conservation group Born Free USA urges zoos to permanently end exhibitions of captive gorillas. The announcement follows the recent shooting of the gorilla named Harambe at the U.S. Cincinnati Zoo. He was killed in order to save a child who had fallen into his enclosure. Born Free says this recent incident is not the first at this zoo and is one of many involving gorillas at zoos throughout the U.S. The group has documented more than 20 incidents involving gorillas at U.S. zoos that demonstrate the risk of keeping them in captivity. Zoo promoters say for the most part, zoos are safe, though accidents may happen. Adam M. Roberts is CEO of Born Free USA. He warns the lesson of Harambe is that having dangerous wild animals in American zoos is not worth the risk to humans and the risks to animals themselves.
There are a number of issues with respect to keeping wild animals such as gorillas in these zoo enclosures. One of them, as is all too often the case, is human health and safety. We have to focus on the fact that time and again across this country, there are dangerous animals being kept in zoos where people have easy access to the animals, or the animals have a means to escape their enclosure and get near the people. And if this was sort of once in a century occurrence, we might have a very different conversation on our hands. hands. But we know that there have been polar bear escapes, gorilla escapes, tiger escapes at zoos around the country, which does in fact make them dangerous facilities for people. But then at the same time, of course, these are animals that belong in the wild. And so putting them in these unnatural enclosures, like at the Cincinnati Zoo, means that it's bad for the individual animals as well. It's not good for their behavioral needs, their physical needs, their environmental needs, and their social needs.
So those zoos that do have these types of animals, what should they be doing now?
Well, I think the first thing is that everyone needs to, across the country, press pause at every zoo and close the doors while they review both their safety protocol and their emergency protocols to ensure that these facilities are foolproof, because accidents do happen. And if a four-year-old boy in the blink of an eye can get through the barrier and down into the gorilla exhibit, then obviously it's not a well-designed enclosure in terms of the safety conditions. And so I think every zoo at every city in the country needs to look at all of their exhibits and make sure that they are, in fact, secure. And then secondly, deal with the emergency protocols so that when this happens again, we do have a better process for deciding whether the animal has to be slaughtered or whether there are other more humane options that can be employed to protect the animal's life, since obviously that gorilla or other similar animals in similar situations has done nothing wrong.
Looking at the other side of this, many zoos say they are protecting endangered species by keeping them in an enclosed, what they say, safer environment. What's your take on this?
I think when zoos keep these animals in captivity, import them from the wild, or breed them in captivity, they're not really doing much to contribute to the conservation of the species. The cost of each of these individual exhibits is actually much, much more money, tens of millions more than the zoos are actually putting into the conservation of the same species in the wild. Animals such as tigers or gorillas that are being bred in captivity in zoos are not being reintroduced to the wild. So really, you're just keeping these animals on display, traded from zoo to zoo for the purpose of entertainment for people who come to the zoo rather than for any conservation of threatened or endangered species.
What are some alternative ways that people can enjoy wild animals?
Well, I think in the U.S., for one thing, we can enjoy wild animals simply by appreciating the animals around us. You know, we have an incredible bounty of national wildlife refuges, national parks, regular parks that are in our cities, state parks, and there are an incredible number of wild areas where we can see and appreciate wildlife. But then at the same time, we also have wildlife sanctuaries such as Big Cat Rescue down in Tampa, Florida, and these are facilities around the country as well, where people can, with guided tours, look at animals that have been rescued as opposed to being imported, bred, or commercially traded in order to be on display and really learn about the plight of these animals. But then, of course, in the day and age we live in, people can simply go on the internet, go to the library, and really learn a lot about animals, but most importantly, learn about these wild animals as they are intended to be in the wild naturally.
That was Adam M. Roberts, CEO of Born Free USA. He spoke with me from Washington, D.C.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports coming up at 18:30 UTC. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Howie Smith, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Hello, I am Shaka Sali. Join me on Straight Talk Africa every Wednesday as we discuss topics of special interest to Africans, including politics, economic development, press freedom, health, social issues, and conflict resolution. Take your pick. Watch on television, log on to the internet, or listen right here on the radio.
Hello, Africa. I'm James Butte, host of VOA's Daybreak Africa. VOA. When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you the news as it happens. Listen to Daybreak Africa Monday through Friday at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC. And our 5 minute newscast come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.